This is URN,
the sports show.
I think he's where he is because he's Andy Murray. You know, he's been part of probably a golden era of tennis with, as we know, Federer, Nadal, Djokovic and the rest, who put up a proper fight, and he seems to have toppled all of them, which is an amazing feat, and now he's world number one.
I think a lot of it has to be down to Djokovic's decline, though. Although Murray has been amazingly impressive, but Djokovic was 8,000 points ahead of Murray in the rankings just in June after the French Open win. And well, I think if he hadn't have lost interest in the game, as we've mentioned on the show before,
yeah,
he might still potentially be top, but it's going to be a great rivalry going into next year.
Yeah, I think hopefully this will be sort of stoke the fires of Djokovic's passion for the sport once again, get him in gear. And
there
we
were
can see
signs, I think, at the O2 that he was getting back to his...
I think you sort of need to be taken down a few pegs to get back up to previous heights, which is hopefully what this will do for Djokovic.
It happens just in sport, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. You need someone to come and knock you off your peg or off your top spot, and you can sort of think, actually, that's where I want to be. I need to get back there, and it sort of whets your appetite again. So hopefully this is the start of a big heavyweight rivalry initiating for a long time.
I think the Australian Open will be very interesting, especially because Djokovic's won, I think, the Australian five or six times now.
Yeah.
And he's beaten Murray in five finals, I think it is. So if that's another final or both of them will... That'll be a very interesting competition.
It'll be interesting to see how Murray... If Murray gets any benefit from the number one seeding... if he is still number one, which he probably should be. There's only a couple of tournaments before the Australian Open.
Well, he's already been declared world number one for the end of the season, so he'll go into the Australian Open as world number one.
Potentially lose points at the start of January, but I don't think he had much to defend anyway, so I think he will be number one going into the Australian Open.
Yeah, adding to that, Murray's got a big advantage with the number one ranking because he doesn't have the points to retain like Djokovic, so if anything it's to Murray's advantage that he's already world number one and he can increase his advantage if he just keeps winning.
Definitely, I think Djokovic has to win the tournament to just retain his points. If he doesn't do, if he doesn't win the tournament, exactly, he's lost more points and more ground on Murray. And well, I think playing first as well, because Djokovic has had the advantage over the last few Grand Slams, past two or three years now, of playing first and having an extra day's rest, and that really does come into the fact, the equation coming into the end of the 2 weeks.
Yeah, looking back at the match of the weekend, Djokovic looked almost tentative, and Murray looked like he had the game nous to come in and win and beat Djokovic. Do you think going into the next season, Murray's focus will now move into winning more Opens now that he's secured the world number one spot?
No, I think definitely, when you get to that point in sport where you're one of the best, you look to achieve everything possible that's put out in front of you. So, tell me if I'm mistaken, but Andy Murray hasn't won Roland Garros, the French Open, and he hasn't won the Australian Open. So
yeah, that's right.
If he wins those two, I think that's probably what's on the agenda for him next, and then to repeat those on and on, because I think Andy Murray will look at number one. I think that's something I've got to retain, but he can tick it off the sheet and go, what's next for me to be a complete legend of the sport?
I think it's good that the two tournaments he hasn't won come first in the calendar year as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully he can just continue this form. And we have to mention, I think, Jamie Murray as well, who's had a really impressive year after changing partners at the start of the year. He's won at least two Grand Slams in the doubles, and the year of the Murrays, really, isn't it? Judy must be proud.
Yeah.
It's good to see British tennis doing so well. I mean, Murray's a role model for so many young players coming in. But just looking at into next season, we've seen, like Lee said at the top of the show, Djokovic might tighten his belt a bit and start deciding he wants to play some tennis. And with Federer and Nadal coming towards the end of their careers, who do you think will start challenging for those, challenging Murray and Djokovic for those Opens?
I think Raonic,
as
he's a nearly man this year.
Definitely.
Lost to Murray in the Wimbledon final and had match points, as Naomi said before, in the semi-final at the O2. I think he's almost there. He's a big server, and on his day you couldn't return a serve of his. He's that good. Well, I don't really see. There's not that many challenges. He could say Nishikori, but he got blown away in his semi-final.
Nishikori did knock Murray out of the U.S. Open, which I thought definitely. Murray would have stormed after Djokovic got knocked out. So I think he looks like a potential challenger.
I also think Wawrinka, when he's playing well, we know that he can win matches because he's already won the American Open this year, and I think he won Wimbledon or something.
I think it was the French Open that he won as well.
Yeah,
I have
it
a
was
feeling
the French Open.
He won the French last year. In 2015, and he won another one.
I think
before
he won
that,
the US Open this year.
So I wouldn't say he's out of it just yet, and definitely Raonic as well. He definitely gave Murray a tough match on Saturday.
I think looking at Wawrinka, it's the best thing about Federer's decline is it sort of allowed Wawrinka to step out of his shadow a bit. But he always looks a bit grumpy on the court, so he never looks fully interested.
Like a grumpy bear with his beard.
He is, but I love watching him play because he is such a powerful player. He's great sort of reminiscent of Nadal's physicality on the court, which is perhaps, you don't see players that just win on power purely, but he's got that ability. But again, he's in the twilight years of his career, so
he's older than Murray and Djokovic.
Exactly, yeah. So I think, like we were saying, you know, you're looking at Raonic and we're just sort of in that phase where the older legends are sort of dying out and we're waiting for those people to come onto the scene in the ilk of Raonic to say, look, we're not going to win it right now, give us a few years and we're going to be there.
Yeah, one thing that I've been reading on Twitter since Murray became world number one is a lot of people calling him to be knighted. There was an article on BBC saying that he's too young to be knighted. What do you think, Sir Andy Murray, or no?
Well, I think, yeah, because if you look at the Olympic athletes who get knighted, like Bradley Wiggins and I think Chris Froome has been knighted as well, cyclists, they're still in their career ongoing. And I think, can you ever be, like, you can obviously be too young to be knighted, but he's 30 now.
I don't think age is really an issue because he's 29 at the moment. Yeah, 29. But look at what he's achieved. Gold at the Olympics in London and Rio. Two Wimbledon titles. World number one. And an American Open to his name. He's achieved so much. And I think he deserves to be Sir Andy Murray.
Yeah, I think the criteria, from what I understand, of getting OB, MB, or whatever the difference is between those two, is to do a service to your sport. And we know someone like Sir Alex Ferguson has one, and there's plenty of people. And Murray has definitely done a service to the sport in light of British terms.
This year alone, I'd say.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, what he's done, we've gone from Tim Henman to Andy Murray. No disrespect to Tim Henman, but Andy Murray has definitely inspired a generation of tennis players. He's gone and powered through not only his own sport, but gone to the Olympics. And I think he's done so much for tennis in the UK that to not knight him would actually be criminal.
Well, the one person who would disagree with you there is the man himself, Andy Murray. He says he's too young. The bookmakers have put him odds on to become Sir Andy, but he says he feels too young, and while it's the highest honour in the country, he says he's making too many mistakes still.
I think you would say that, though. Even if you deserved it, I don't think Sir Alex Ferguson would have, like, demanded a knighthood. You receive it and you're gracious for receiving it. I think you're not going to go out and say I deserve a knighthood now, because that's not what he's playing for.
Yeah,
and also, yes, Murray still makes mistakes. Ferguson didn't win every match. United didn't always go unbeaten. There were times when Manchester United were in trouble. I don't think it matters, as long as generally he's had a good career, which he has so far. He deserves to be knighted.
Yeah, I think looking at that comment, like we said, the great thing about that comment is he's not gone no, he's gone no, I still have room to improve, in essence is what he said there, and that is the mark of a great sportsman.
Yeah, despite becoming world number one, he still wants to go out there and win those Opens. I think one player who we didn't mention might challenge for Opens next season is Wilfried Tsonga and Thomas Berdych. They've been there and thereabouts over the last 4 or 5 years. Do you guys think they could be potential challengers for Opens?
They're sort of the nearly men again, but they seem, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're not the youngest of gentlemen. And I know Berdych has made a Wimbledon final against Djokovic, and I've seen enough matches between Murray and Tsonga just to know he's not in the same bracket as Andy Murray, so they're players that do themselves justice. But
a player who could be a potential threat is Maran Cilic, who has pushed, I think he beat Murray in Cincinnati, I think it was, and he's pushed Murray, and he beat Djokovic at the Paris Masters. And well, if he's on his day again, He could be anyone, I think. So he is probably more of a potential threat than Songa and Burdic.
I also think that we missed out Juan Martin Del Potro, who's obviously won the US Open, and he was injured for over a year, and now he's back. He's definitely up in the mix, and I think once he's back in the higher in the rankings and he's got a better draw for competitions, he'll definitely be up there.
Yeah, he's a sensational player, actually. I have a distinct memory of watching him at Wimbledon in the semi-final against Djokovic. Went to five sets a few years ago. It was the best match of tennis I've ever seen, and he was just, you've never seen someone make Djokovic work so hard for their dinner, and he was sensational. And if he can sort of shake off his injuries, like we were saying, he definitely could be in the mix, and you'd love to see him back up there because he's got some serious skills.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who challenges for those Opens next season, with the door open with Nadal and Federer almost coming towards the end of their careers. One aspect of tennis I'd like to look at is British tennis. Obviously, Murray has done leaps and bounds for it, but the likes of Carl Edmund and Daniel Evans have broken into the top 100. Carl Edmund's 45th in the rankings now. Would you guys make of the progress British tennis has made in the last few years?
Excellent on both sides, because you can mention Konta as well, who has overtaken British number one from Heather Watson. And while she's broken the top 10, world end top 10 player. So yeah, I think British tennis is probably in the best, like, one of the best phases it's ever been in. And certainly during my lifetime, there's never been a better spell.
It was an interesting test match. I think the toss, like Cook said in his interview, which was clipped at the air at the top of the show, was extremely important, and it was one England needed to win on such a flat pitch, which offered a lot to spin bowlers, which is obviously England's weakness and India's strength. Geoffrey Boycott, in his analysis after the game, said England went down like a pack of cards and we have a habit of collapsing. Would you guys agree with what Boycott said?
Definitely. I think especially when we don't bat first, we have a tendency to be a side that does not have the mental capacity to get over the line in the fourth innings. We can't bat it out. We saw that in Bangladesh. We lost the second test. We're only chasing 260, although a big score. But we collapsed from 100 for none to 164 all out. And I think it's been highlighted a lot over the years that as soon as we lose Cook or Root, we're done, basically.
Yeah, this pitch was by no means a minefield, and it was disappointing to see both in the England's first and second innings how they went down after the top two went down. I do have to say that I was extremely impressed by the new top-order batsman, Hamid. Do you think he's the solution to our problems in the top two?
Yeah, well, I think we've started to mention him on every week of the show at the moment, and as a 19-year-old, he's really, really impressive. I think he is the future of England cricket. I think we've found a partner for Alistair Cook to open up with. Well, the 45-over stand in the second innings gave England a glimmer of hope, but as always, it's never really that much hope, is it?
Let's give some credit to India. For the score they set for India, 400-plus was... for England even, was a record chase for England. And while we said it in previous shows that they'd whitewash England, were you impressed by India, or was it just a lack of... England being poor?
India were good, but I'd say I'd like to see them, if they'd batted second and fourth on that pitch as well. I think the toss decided the match from the start, that India couldn't lose, so pressure was off. As long as they got a good score in the first innings, England were going to be under massive pressure. But you can't take anything away from Virat Kohli, who's had an amazing, amazing time of it of late. 167 is huge in the first innings, and another 81. He looks impressive form, and I think if we can't get him out, we'll end up not winning a test because he's that important to the team.
Yeah, he came into the test series in impressive form, and he's just continued that. The next test is on Saturday and is in Mohali in the north of India. It'll be interesting to see how India do, especially with the concerns over Stuart Broad's fitness and Ben Duckett's lack of form. So what type of changes do you think England should and will make going into Saturday's test?
The pundits seem to suggest it's going to be a seamers, more seamer-friendly pitch. So that was calls to put in a fourth seamer. So have Anderson, Broad, if he's fit, Wokes and Stokes, and remove Ansari from the team, who's the third spinner. And he doesn't look He looks very out of his depth at test level at the moment. He can't really bat, and he is in the team partly on his batting as well, and he hasn't had a great time of it with the bat, and he's certainly not had a great time of it with the ball. Moving on to Ben Duckett, I think he will be dropped for the next test. I think Joss Butler will come in and bat further down the order, maybe move Bairstow up to number four and do it like that. Maybe Butler about seven, go out, make him attacking, but I don't think Ben Duckett can be in the team after the... It's more his technique and his mental strength. He does have the potential to be a great player, but I don't think it is going to happen right now.
But looking at the Grand Prix, obviously it's been well documented how Hamilton's had his engine troubles this season. Do you think something like that could decide the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix?
I hope so, because I was reading about it earlier. This incident chart I was looking at comparing Rosberg and Hamilton. This includes penalties, collisions, poor starts, and engine failures. Of these incidents, 10 have occurred to Lewis Hamilton this season. 9 have occurred to Rosberg. None of those 9 for Rosberg were engine failures. 3 of those 10 for Hamilton were engine failures, most recently in Malaysia. So we're going to assume that Hamilton, at worst, maybe if he didn't have the failures in those 3 races, he'd be up another, was it 3 times 18, if someone does the maths, because I don't want to make a fool of myself on air. 54, thank you very much. He'd be 54 points better off and probably leading the championship. Now, you do need luck to come your way.
It wasn't Rosberg's only crash with Hamilton as well?
Yes.
A major crash, I think.
Yeah, I think it was the Spanish Grand Prix at Catalunya, if I'm not mistaken. So, look, Rosberg has got all of the green, not just the rub of it, all of it. But that you do need that. And I think that he will still get a championship. But I fingers crossed that a Mercedes engine in Rosberg's car will fall to pieces halfway through the race.
Button comes flying in.
Button, would that be a great way to end his career in Formula One, to deliver the championship on a silver platter to Lewis Hamilton? Boy, oh boy, wouldn't that make for some exciting racing?
It will be interesting to see if there's any car failures in the weekend's race, and it will be interesting to see how Button does do in his last race. It will be sad to see him no longer racing on the circuit and no longer being... he's been one of my favourite drivers since I've been watching F1. I believe it's Alonso's also last race as well.
No, Alonso's contract runs out at the end of next year, and there's discussions that he might move into another motorsport discipline, but the only curtain call for the drivers this race will be is also Felipe Massa, who, between him and Jenson Button, I think have over 500 Grand Prix, which is staggering. So it's going to be really upsetting. I have to say, Jenson Button has been my favourite driver, just like you were saying, Amar, with some amazing performances. So it's really upsetting.
It's going to be exciting, though, to see who comes in, isn't it? Like, the next generation of drivers, obviously we've got Verstappen, but who do you think who's going to challenge you come in?
Doesn't matter. It's Max. It's just going to be the Max Verstappen show from now on. I think after watching the Brazilian Grand Prix, I was blown away so much. I was like, doesn't matter. Any drivers that come in, they can't be as good as Verstappen. But I'm sure that's what many people were saying before young Max turned up at Toro Rosso and then knocking on the Red Bull door and then making a fool out of everyone at Brazil a few weeks ago. So, McLaren have decided to replace Button with a younger driver, Van Dorn, I forget his name. So that's pretty impressive if you're displacing Jenson Button. So clearly there's some young talent on the way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how much young talent actually comes through. Just looking at Verstappen, he's currently fourth in the tournament.
Fourth or fifth, yeah.
And he's I was looking at the rankings the other day before the show, and he's not that far off Sebastian Vettel, who's above him. So that'll be another interesting aspect of the race, to see who can take that fourth space, because at the end of the day, it does mean more money for that team.
Yeah, I think you've got to be just back on form, as you do with any sport. You see Verstappen doing well there, but Abu Dhabi has got some pretty long straights, which will allow the Ferrari engine to stretch its legs and the Renault engine to wheeze its way towards the breaking point. So I would say you probably put it in Vettel's hands, but don't put anything past Max, who is lethal under braking.
This is URN, the sports show.